Welcome to the show. My name is Tony Gambone, and I'm here on the Tough Talk Christian Radio. And we have an exciting show today. I always feel that way on Sunday mornings, but you can catch us every Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8:30 here on the Tough Talk Radio Network, and that's 7:30 to 8:30 Central Standard Time. And before we bring up our guest today, I just want to get some housekeeping out of the way. You can call into the show 347-989-1363. Press 1 if you want to ask a question, or you can just listen by phone. You can find us on Facebook under Tough Talk Radio Network, or you can find me under Tony Gambone. You can find us on Twitter under TTRN. Always excited to connect with people. Please reach out and touch with us. If you're someone that wants to be a guest on one of the shows, well, you can go to toughtalkchristianradio.com. Click the button to register. Pick a day to fit your schedule that's available here with our schedule, and we'll get you up on the air. We'd love to promote what others are doing out there in the world. So today's guest, special guest for me, a lady by the name of Jenny Jones. Now, I've met Jenny approximately 6 years ago when I found the Lord at a local church here in the Houston area, and at that time, I wasn't very familiar with anything other than the fact that I knew I had parked in that parking lot of the church that I was standing inside. And prior to that, it had probably been 30, 40, at least 40 years since I'd been in the church. And much to my surprise, a lot of things happened at that church that changed my life around. So as you can imagine, anyone that was a part of that church, well, they hold a special part in my heart. And as time went along, Jenny was in charge at that time of the youth ministry, and I didn't get to know her too much. I get to see her running around, be very busy on Sundays. But for myself, you know, I probably got to know her dad, I would say, first. And I can honestly say I don't think her dad, Mike, has ever met a stranger. But I had a great time getting to know him, which made me want to know Jenny more. And then Jenny authored a book, and like myself, when I authored a book, I started to gain more interest in other people that were writing books. So that took place, and her book just came out recently, and a lot of things have changed in Jenny's life in the last year. You know, God has a way of making us grow even if we don't want to. He has a way of making us expand and serve others even though we think we're in a spot that is where we're supposed to be, and I deal with that every day as well as everyone listening to the show. Hard part is probably following God's chosen path, but really excited about having Jenny on the show today because she's going to be able to explain to you some of the ways that she has created a discipline, maybe you want to call it, for her to follow the Lord's way. So before we go any further, I want to introduce Jenny to the show. Jenny, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Now, Jenny, before we dig in deep to a lot of different things, I want people to know a little bit about Jenny. And I know that you're in the outskirts of Houston, a town called Katy. That's where I reside as well. But tell me, where are you from originally?
So I actually grew up in Katy. I have lived in Katy my entire life, except I went to college in Arkansas, which was kind of random. But that was the only time that I've really ever been away from my hometown of Katy. I went to Katy Elementary, Katy Junior High, Katy High School. So kind of a hometown girl in that sense.
Mm. Well, for the people that don't know the city of Katy, when someone says they went to Katy High School, I'm a witness. Two of my boys graduated in Katy, and when I first moved here, I thought they were all crazy at that high school,
right.
And I became one of them. So it's an awesome opportunity to raise children in this area. So, yeah. Jenny, were you always one to go to church at a young age?
Yeah, no, I actually did not start following the Lord until between my sixth and seventh grade year in middle school. And that was because I had a friend at that time. The junior high that I went to, all of the lockers were taken. Like, there were too many kids for lockers in school, so they had to pair us up for, like, locker buddies. And so I got paired up with a locker buddy, and it turned out that her family, they were great Christians. Her dad was actually a leader in the local church. And so they had a rule at their house that if you came over to their house and you spent the night on a Saturday night, that you had to go to church with their family on Sunday morning. Like, there was no going home before church, or they wouldn't drop you off at home before church or anything like that. You had to go. So anyway, I became friends with this girl, and sure enough, started hanging out at her house, and ended up going to church with her family one Sunday, and liked it, and so went several Sundays in a row. And through that relationship, as well as through going to church with her family, is where I connected with the youth ministry at our church, and then also where I was, you know, led to the Lord and made a commitment to place my trust in Christ and follow Him for the rest of my life. And so that was about, I think I was 12 years old when that happened. And my parents, the great, amazing, like, very moral people, but church or Christianity was not really a priority in our house until they had seen me going to church and they had seen the life change that had happened for me. And so when I was around 16, 17 years old is when my parents actually began to attend church with me. I'd gone by myself up until that point. And so they began to attend church with me, and then they actually ended up becoming Christians and following their the Lord and then giving their life to Him. And so from the time I was about 17, they've been following the Lord as well. So that's that's how I found God, through a locker buddy at junior high. So
That's pretty awesome. You know, it took me a lot longer to find the Lord. You know, I just, probably because I'm a lot more stubborn or smarter in my own mind, of course, than others.
Yeah.
But whenever you get there, it's never too late. That's the beauty of Jesus and finding Him and giving your life up for Jesus. But you went to college in Arkansas. Did you go there for theology?
So I did, actually. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I went to a small school called Washtenaw Baptist University. It's about an hour past Texarkana into Arkansas. And when I went, I actually had two majors because I couldn't decide what I wanted to do. So I did a biblical studies major, but I also did a political science major, mainly because I knew that I really wanted to work with families, and particularly families that were marginalized, or kids that were marginalized, whether that was due to neglect or abuse or poverty or anything like that, that just held a really special place in my heart and something that I knew I wanted to be involved in. And so I didn't know if I was going to be involved in it through, like, ministry and through the local church, or on the legal side of it, because I was interested in both. So I actually went to college and graduated with a biblical studies degree and a pre-law degree. And it wasn't until about my senior year of college that it was very clear to me that the Lord was asking me calling me to ministry, to be a pastor and involved in the local church, and really connecting with families, and leading families to follow Christ and what that looks like. And then being in part of the social justice side of it through churches as well. So anyway, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. So I majored in both of them, and then the Lord revealed that to me about my senior year. So then I went down the route of going into ministry, and I'm currently right now in grad school. I'm going to seminary and getting a degree in a biblical interpretation, a master's degree in biblical interpretation. So that's kind of how the Lord has, I guess, formed my educational side of it.
Very brave. I just want to mention you have four children?
Yes,
and,
four.
I believe I read somewhere in your book, and we'll get to your book in a minute, that they were all under a certain age, maybe under middle school age. Is that correct?
Yeah. I have four of them. And so they go 4 or 10. Our oldest is 10. So 10, 7, 5, and 3 are the ages of our kiddos.
And you're in school to get your master's, and you just opened a church. So
yes, yeah.
It's going to make sense to everyone later when we talk about how important checklists are to you. but I'm starting to understand right. myself now. But, so yeah. I just want to talk about opening a church. You were part of the when I started going to Parkway Fellowship here in the Katy area. It was just it was his first week opening in a building of its own. It was in a high school before that, and that was 6 years ago. This past February, and now you have, you've raised the walls of another church. You and Pastor Ryan are raising a church. It's called Real Hope.
Yes, Real Hope Community Church.
So, yes. Now my question is, it's got to be phenomenal. I spent 20 years in the casino business, and I know what it was like opening casinos up. Okay, and this is a heck of a comparison, but when you watch people get something out of something that you've done, it's hard to explain that. How does that, I know you're very humble, but doing that, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, we actually just talked about this because we are going into month 3 of Real Hope opening. We launched on September 11th. And we spent the entire year before that planning and kind of getting ready for this launch. And so the closest thing I can compare it to, if this has ever been an experience in your life or the life of your listeners, is getting ready for that launch Sunday, with September 11th. It's comparable to like planning for a wedding, right? Like it takes an enormous amount of time. And you put so much effort into it, and you have this one Sunday, which is, it's amazing, and it's phenomenal. But then the next day on Monday, you realize, oh my gosh, we have to do this 6 days from now. And we just spent 6 months planning for this one day that we're going to have to do again in 6 days. And so it's an interesting thing of getting into the routine of obviously doing ministry in a new place, in a new community, with new volunteers, new people walking through your doors on a weekly basis. But I think the thing that is so exhilarating about it, and I still experience this, I mean, we're going into month 3, and I still, every single Sunday as people are walking through the doors, the first thought that comes to my mind is, why are they here? And not because I don't believe in our mission and our vision of what we're doing, but because it's this phenomenal thing to see God put something on your heart, and you say yes to that, and you're obedient to it, and not by your strength, but by his strength, he makes it come to fruition, and then to see it affect people's lives in a way that's going to not only affect them here, but affect their entire eternity, and that they now identify with, this is my church. I mean, this is where I have ownership. This is where I go to hear about the Lord and to meet the Lord, and just to watch them walk through those doors every Sunday, and especially the people that, you know, are similar to where you were coming from, Tony. Like, it had been years upon years, maybe even decades, since they had walked in the doors of a church. And the neat thing about a church plant is that out of every sort of different conventional ways of doing church, church plants actually reach the most people for Christ because people are curious about the new thing that's in the community. And we definitely have seen that. And so I think it's incredibly humbling that the Lord would entrust us with this amazing vision that is eternally affecting people's lives. And then it is incredible. I'm just constantly thankful every week that I get to witness that, and that's my job. Like, that's what I do for a living, is I get to witness life change. And so I love it, and I'm so thankful that he called us to do it. Now, it is scary. I won't lie to you. It is as scary as I'll get out to do something like that, to just be a part of something that starts from scratch. But God has been so faithful to us, and I'm just thankful to be a part of it.
Well, I can tell the people listening to this interview, I was there on opening day, I guess, for the first day of church there, and it was nothing – I've never experienced that. I did go to the park on the first day they were in a building, but I didn't even know why I was there. I was there out of hope, out of desperate hope of something happening.
Yeah.
Not because I found the lure, just because it was a chance. And going to the church when you guys opened it up, When I sat in Real Hope Community Church on that day, the one service, you know, I've been a business owner for over 20 years. I've helped coach business owners. I felt so proud knowing you guys and knowing that the time that you put in there, you know, I was just, I don't know if I could have been prouder if I was your parent, you know, but I just felt that overwhelmingness. And, you know, God brings that on us, right? But I just felt so good. I was counting the seats to see how many people were there. I was just really, really excited, you know. And,
thank you.
I came back the next week. And you know, I wanted to support. And there was a lot less people there. And it is because people were nosy at what was going on. But the great part is, you know, each week more people are giving their lives to Christ in that building. So that's an awesome thing. You know, just awesome. And I can't even imagine to understand your feeling of it. But I think it's if people would just step out and trust God, sometimes the small little rewards, just like wondering, what are they doing here? Why did they come here? It's overwhelming and hard to explain, but it is easier to stay on course when we start to waver from time to time. So really, big congratulations to you and Ryan Lockmo for doing that. That's just awesome. So
thank you.
I want to talk about your book. I'm a big fan of people telling their story in a book. I think, and you know, I'm not nearly as educated as you guys with being a Christian or reading the Bible or anything, but I really feel as though God makes us go through certain things so that we can share with others our certain things. And I think that when people sit down and start writing that down on paper, they remember how blessed they were instead of how poor little old them didn't get what they thought they should have. So when I, you know, heard that you wrote a book, I was really excited. And I just want to tell everyone that the name of the book is Too Blessed to Say Yes. When the American Dream Keeps Us from Surrendering to God. So I'm going to get to your checklist in a minute, but what made you or who convinced you or what took place that made you decide to write this book?
Yeah, so I think, and I mean, it's so interesting kind of sitting here right now. I promise you I won't talk about or go into the election too much, because I know that that's not what your show's for. But it's really interesting writing this book and then it launching kind of in the, you know, height of election season, because rarely does anybody talk about the concept of the American dream negatively, right? I mean, that's one of the great, amazing things of living in this country and being born in this country or however people got here and are establishing life here in America. It's this pursuit of the American dream. And my husband and I, we were no exception to that, for sure. We definitely, you know, were very driven to kind of do the things that we were supposed to do. And you'd mentioned the checklist, and that was definitely true for us. You know, we wanted to, you know, get great grades and go to great schools and, you know, just marry the right people and have the, you know, just the house in the suburbs and the, you know, all of that, right? The right kind of cars and moving in the right neighborhood so our kids can go to the right kind of schools and all of those kind of things. And for us, you know, those things in and of themselves are not bad. And I don't think people that want to prioritize that or their kids' education, I don't think you're bad or you're not a good Christian or anything like that. I would never say that. But I know for us, what had happened is that that became the priority of our life. That became the pursuit. It became about basically getting more to get ahead to build our own kingdom and less about why God may be giving us some of these resources or these blessings, in that we kind of just had this realization that, you know, maybe God isn't blessing us with this stuff or giving us these opportunities so that we can move up the corporate ladder or we can move up to advance ourselves. But that as we read through the Bible and particularly the New Testament, it seemed that there was really only a couple things that Jesus was really concerned with, and it was loving God and loving people. And so we realized that we needed to do some recalibration and that we needed to look at the opportunities and the blessings that we had been given and not use those as a pursuit of the American dream, but rather use those as a way to build God's kingdom and to bring other people to Him. And so for us, that was a pretty, radical time for us, because we, for the first time, just would spend time every single day, my husband and I together, we would spend time every day and we read through the New Testament, and we tried to do it in a way that would give us reading it through eyes as if we'd never seen it before. And so we did that, and we also prayed. And so we would end literally every day just sitting next to each other, and we would pray, and we would just tell God, you know, our answer to whatever you ask us to do is yes, before you even pose the question. And the reason that was really important to us is because we felt like when you're in the moment, it's really hard sometimes to say yes to the things God's asking you to do. But if you can make a decision that you're going to say yes before the question's even asked, then it makes it easier when the question comes along. And so we ended every day reading some of the New Testament and then praying and saying, God, our answer to you is yes, no matter what you ask us to do. And if that means you ask us to sell everything and give it all away, and then that's what we want to do. If that means you're asking us to get involved in some of these social justices in some way, then that's what we need to do, whatever you're going to ask us to do. And so that whole story and that journey of what that process looked like, that's what makes up the book. And that's what really led me to writing the book, because God just did phenomenal things in our family in that time. And I wanted the world to know about it, and I wanted to encourage other people to be brave and pray those kind of prayers as well.
I love that. I made a note, and you know, my answer is yes. You know, that is really good, because you do get caught up in the moment when things take place, and just like a child in a candy store, you just get too excited and you can't get a redo or a do-over, you know, or a mulligan or something like that. So having that spoken ahead of time makes it easier, I would say, most of the time. I'm sure there's been times where you were sorry that you said yes ahead of time, but,
yeah,
you know, that's part of the maturity of it. And so
yeah,
looking in your book, I see the first chapter, When Did Christianity Get So Boring? And I want to mention this again, Too Blessed to Say Yes. You can go on Amazon and it pops right up, by the book, okay? But it's amazing if anyone out there happens to have a Facebook page and in this last couple of days seen any of the posts on Facebook or maybe even a news channel that people are protesting wherever they're protesting. And God help them all, because I don't know enough to have an argument good enough to go against what everybody's doing. But the thing of it is, it's like, wow, did you have this sitting on the shelf? Were you talking to somebody way ahead of time? How did you come up with that? You know, and you know, when did Christianity get so boring? Tell them a little bit about what that means.
Yeah, so basically I had, I'm a perfectionist. I like to be good at whatever I try. And so if I'm ever in a position where maybe I have to try or do something for the first time, or I don't know anything about it, I'm going to try to learn as much as I can about that particular subject or that particular even hobby or sport or whatever it may be before I try it for a first time, because I don't like to fail at things. I mean, I don't think any of us like to fail at things, but I try to go to exuberant lengths to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so part of that was this concept of this checklist that you're talking about. I had essentially, as I was growing up, kind of looked around and observed, okay, there's someone like I want my life to emulate, and so I've got to figure out what they've done along the way. And then I've got to do that. And if I do that and I follow that formula, then it's going to produce this result. And again, like these concepts that I'm talking about, I mean, in and of themselves, they're not bad things. I mean, they're things we teach our kids even, right? Yeah, like follow good influences, don't follow bad influences. But it's all the motivation behind it, right? And so I did that. And basically, I just pursued it with such a focus that essentially right before my 30th birthday, I kind of was sitting with my husband, and I had this moment of, I don't know what else is on the list to do. I feel like I have checked the list, and it wasn't in a prideful way, like a, wow, look at me, I've already checked the list. It was in a very somber, sad way of, if this is what Christianity is all about, is just doing the right thing and making the right decision and, you know, marrying the right person and living in the right neighborhood and all of those kind of things, if this is what Christianity, like American Christianity, really is all about, then one, I've done it and I haven't even turned 30 yet. And so what in the world am I going to do with the rest of my life? And, you know, you can call it like a spiritual crisis or whatever you want to call it. But I just remember getting to a point where I thought, there's no way that Jesus gave his life, that God gave his only son for us to basically be able to build a list that we can check off by the time we're 30 years old. Like, there's no way that that's what it's all about. And if it is that, if that is what it's all about, like, I don't know that I'm interested in doing that for the rest of my life, because it's exhausting and it's honestly a little boring. And so that's where that, that's where that chapter came out of, is just a realization. And that's kind of what started this whole journey for us. And so that was the point for me that was kind of scary, because here I was a pastor on a, at a relatively large church in the Houston area, and kind of having these sort of philosophical spiritual questions. And so that's when my husband and I, through conversations, kind of just made the commitment. He's the one that actually brought up the idea. He said, well, why don't we try to read the words of Jesus and study his life through the New Testament as if we'd never seen it before, as if it was like, this is the first time we're reading the New Testament. And then let's try to do that. So let's not do what everybody else says Christianity should be, or what they've made it out to be, but let's just do that in its purest form and see, and basically kind of just see what happens. And so we did. And I think the heart of the book, the real heart of the book, and where the title came from, is that through that we realized that some of these things that society calls blessings in our life were actually the very things that were getting in the way of us saying yes to God. And we realized that when Jesus defines blessing, and particularly like in Matthew chapter 5, he says things like, you know, blessed are the meek, blessed are those that are persecuted. He describes a blessed life in a way that if our society looked at a life that resembled that, they would say, well, that man is not blessed, that person is cursed. And so we just realized that where we had gone wrong is we had aligned our lives with the American dream and not with the gospel, and that we needed to get back to that. And so that's the premise of the book. That's the whole journey of our family getting back to the gospel.
So, you know, Jenny, I mentioned that you used to head up the children's ministry at the church at Parkway Fellowship, and now you're an executive pastor at the church that you've just opened. And so when I look at adults, you know, I you're a leadership coach, okay, and I have been coaching people for some time as well, and I find that adults are just children in older bodies. So
yes,
do you think
exactly
having all that experience with the youth has helped you to receive a way of helping adults? Because, you know, the adults are, well, they're the definition of the book you wrote. I mean, we just check off the list, okay, you go to college. I mean, I'm a parent, right? So you tell your kids, you go to college, you get a good job, you marry the right woman. If you get lucky enough, you can have a nice home and raise three children, four children successfully, and they go to college, and it's like a on and on and on. And it's kind of rewarding as you're going through your 20s and your 30s. But when you get to your 40s and your 50s, okay, and you're ahead of the game because you got there sooner, but there's no value. I mean, there's no there's just no value. So how do you use what you learned with working with youth to help adults in leadership?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that was most exhilarating for me in working with kids and teenagers was essentially, especially after going through this journey and writing this book, is that I felt like I had this opportunity in which to, you know, basically get kids and get them to understand what it really is, what the adventure of being a Christian and following Christ really is, and what your life should look like if you are following Christ and his word in its purest form, and how it's not going to be boring and it's not going to be a checklist. It's going to be this amazing adventure. It's going to be the most exhilarating thing you've ever done or devoted your life to. And so I felt like, man, if somebody could have gotten that into me at such a young age, I wonder how my 20s, 30s would have looked different. That was one of the things that was most challenging to me about working with kids and most exciting, is that we had this opportunity to kind of do it on the ground floor. And then as the Lord began to cultivate this vision for Real Hope Community Church and our family, and Ryan and Ashley Locksmith's family as well, it was clear that he was kind of calling me to use some of the gifts and skill sets that I developed in working with kids, particularly like the leadership and administrative roles, working with so many different volunteer teams and so many different jobs, and in that I was supposed to be doing that on really like a larger scale of influencing the organization as a whole. And so working with kids and stuff, how it really prepared me for executive pastors, definitely on just some of the task side of it, some of the administrative side of it, but on the spiritual side of it, it was exactly confirmed me exactly what you just said, Tony, of that essentially the spiritual issues and stuff that kids are walking through are not that different from what adults are walking through. It's just the examples of it look different. And obviously the examples of it and the things that it, the way it applies in the life of an adult is a little bit different because, you know, for the most part, kids aren't paying mortgages and they're not doing stuff like that. But the core of it is the same. And I also realized that through working with kids that I would have these adults that would come into our volunteer and our kids ministry, and the best discipleship that they went through was preparing to teach a Bible lesson to a group of kids every week, because they had never had that foundational biblical knowledge. And so it was really a drive for me of, okay, I have this opportunity where I'm really having a chance to coach and lead adults on how to lead kids, and we're capturing kids at a young age. But when the Lord called me to be an executive pastor, it was this exhilarating kind of opportunity of, now I have the opportunity to do that from the youngest to the oldest age in our church, and really watch how the Lord applies his scripture to different seasons of life throughout different generations. And so the interesting thing about it is, a lot of people say that must have been a big transition for you, going from like kids ministry to being an executive pastor now and kind of working on the operational side of the church. But it really isn't any different, because the spiritual issues are the same. That just the application is different. And so I'm really thankful for the time that I got to do kids ministry. And it's really neat now to see how the Lord has given me an opportunity to work with all age groups, and kind of be able to even, you know, begin to coach volunteers and manage staff, which is a huge thing that I do. And then also to be able to work with parents and teaching them how to disciple their kids at home, since I had so many years of it at the church. So it's a neat thing, and I'm really thankful for the opportunity. I love my job, for sure.
Well, I find it interesting when I start looking at different things about you, okay? You mentioned before that, you know, you always wanted to be very prepared for anything new that you tried. And that's probably a way of saying that you're kind of competitive, okay?
Yeah.
And great. I mean, you know, who wouldn't appreciate raising children that are competitive? That just means they're going to try their hardest, and they're going to do what they got to do to win, right? And then you came along and you found out that he who checks the most boxes doesn't mean he won the game yet. There's a different side to that. And I think for you, you know, checking all the boxes gave you the experience to understand the value of that, so that you could go ahead and move forward in teaching people the value of not, you know, of checking the boxes. I mean, I don't think you're saying don't just check the boxes. Don't have a goal in mind, or know what your expectations are, what you're trying to do. But somewhere along the line, God's going to come along, and He's going to trip you up somehow. I think He has a great sense of humor, but He will allow you to fall down and understand what you've been practicing for. And so, you're blessed. I mean, you're smart enough that you got it in the first 30 years of your life. I'm on my second 30, and I'm starting to get it a little bit. But the great news is it's never too late. So when we look at this here, checklist of yours, I hope people don't get the wrong impression that I'm going to read off a couple of things. The first one, and this was when you were younger, you started this, be a poster child of my youth group. And and don't make the same mistakes that my brothers made. Okay? And that sounds like such a sister. Marry the perfect guy. Okay? Have awesome kids. Be a pastor. Be debt free. Be financially smart. Buy a house. I like this one. Buy a better house. So these are all the things that's why we get up and go to work and drive down I-10 in hours of traffic and do what we do for our children, because we've got this big picture. So I know we talked before the show about your book. It's kind of like it can be used for a small group series as well. Is that something that you see hitting the shelf soon?
Yeah, actually, so there's two kind of big projects in the works now that the book itself has been released. I am going to write some, not full small group curriculum, but some small group discussion questions to go along with each chapter. So that'll come out probably in, 2017, sometime 2017. I'm also in the process, too, of recording the audio book. So for me, I know, like, I love to read, but I also drive in the car a lot because I have four kids. And so I listen to a lot of audiobooks. So that's something that was really important to me when I was talking to my publisher, is I want to be able to do an audiobook of this. So a small group, like discussion questions, leading questions to go along with each chapter as well as the audiobook, that's something that will be coming out in 2017.
Awesome. And tell everyone – what time on Sundays? Because if you live in the Houston area, okay, this is a great opportunity for you to come meet Jenny personally, meet the staff she works with, see what she's doing, and even become a part of it. Tell them how they could do that on Sundays.
Yeah, so the best way to get our information is to go to our website, which is realhopecc.org. And so that gives you all the information you need. But we meet every single Sunday morning at 10 a.m. We meet at Adolphus Elementary School. And all of that information, directions, all of that is on our web. But, yes, of course, we would love to see you there. I would love to meet you.
And if you're shy, call me, and I'll go with you and introduce you to Jenny and Ryan and the team over there. It's a great opportunity for people to go there. Now, we're having a very serious conversation here about your book and about your life. And I want to mention, Too Blessed to Say Yes is the name of the book, Jenny Day Jones. Find it on Amazon. But you have a great sense of humor, okay?
Thank you.
Might even think you're a practical joker. Where did that come from?
Oh, my God, for sure. You had mentioned earlier, when you were talking about me, my dad has never met a stranger. And it's so interesting because I often think of myself, when I think of I am, I'm an extreme extrovert. And I always am constantly almost a little, not insecure about it, but questioning a lot when I'm around some of my friends that are not. I'll think, man, there must be something wrong with me. Like, I'm just so extremely extroverted. But what's funny is that when I'm around my dad, I feel like an introvert. I mean, that man is so extroverted, and he just so deeply loves people. But one of the ways that he connects with people and makes them feel so comfortable is through humor. And that's something that I grew up seeing. And I've always thought my dad was really funny. I mean, I well, I guess now he's going to hear that because I would never want to tell him that. But I've always thought that my dad was really funny. And I always saw that he was so, he was great at connecting with people. And I mean, this was before he started following Christ even. And so now the Lord has really used that where he connects with anybody. We just last week, this is a completely side story, but just last week, my mom was in surgery. She actually had to have a brain tumor removed, and we're sitting there, we're in the waiting room and everything, and my dad is like the mayor of the hospital. I mean, the guy's going around the waiting room, like just engaging people in conversation, praying for their loved ones, you know, getting them to laugh, getting them to smile. And so I always saw that, and it's something that's always served me so well in really any aspect of my life, but especially in ministry, because it's an intimidating thing to walk into a church. And so I've been thankful that I've always been able to kind of use humor to connect with people and kind of just get them comfortable with being there, and that we're not so serious. Like we don't take ourselves that serious at Real Hope. And so you can laugh, and it's going to be a place that's going to be fun while you're there. So I'm really thankful to him for that, for illustrating that to me as I was growing up.
Well, I met your dad because we had something in common. And it was health issues from your mom and from myself. And, you know, we had talked about having a small group for that because of the spouse of this one with the illness. You know, there's a whole thing. And him and I, if we see each other in the parking lot of church, it could be an hour later before we realize our car's running.
Yeah.
But I want to touch on one thing that I've noticed at the church when I was there. Okay. There's a gentleman there that is taking care of youth there. His name is Percy Hudson. And when I was at the church, you know, I'm always checking things out. I'm always watching the face of people listening to the pastor. I'm always looking in, like I had a chance to look in where the youth were and how that was looking and if were they paying attention. That's just who I am, you know. And that man, Percy, had a smile on his face, and I've known him for a little while, that I've never seen. So I can tell you, I'm witnessing the smiles and the growth that you're causing people. And listen, you're a 30-year-old female pastor in the South. That's not very common, okay?
It's so a rare you breed. Have,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it surely is. But the thing of it is, Jenny, you don't have this high and mighty thing happening. You're a regular person, and I can't express how proud I am that I've been blessed enough to know you and your family and your husband. Okay, he's was in the worship at one church, and now he's working the back of the room. You guys got a great setup. It's just awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
We don't see a lot of husbands and wives that work together, let alone like each other. So awesome job.
Thank you.
Awesome,
thank you
awesome
so much.
Job. So we're up against the clock for the time. I'd just like for you to give someone a tip for today. And even if you want to throw it in at the political thing, because I follow you on Facebook, and I know that we've been hoping that people will just not let the fool show up out of them on this day, but, hey, we have no control over it. So what's one thing you would tell everyone that they may make sure to finish out 2016 properly?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I would say for finishing out 2016 – is, you know, don't be outside of your family. I'll say this, outside of your family, don't hold on to anything so tight that the Lord could not take it and maybe adjust it. You know, go into 2017 with your hands open, asking God how he would want any part of your life to look differently. And as scary as that question may be, it will be something that is the most freeing act you've ever experienced in your life. So that's my prayer for my kids, is that they always approach the Lord very open-handed. And that would be my prayer for anybody else listening going into 2017.
Well, good advice. The one thing that I wrote down is to make sure I say yes to whatever it is I'm praying for, or I will be praying for in the future, because only God knows what that is. So I just can't thank you enough today for spending time with us. We're going to get you back on the show after the first of the year to catch up with what's going on at the church. So once again, Jenny, thank you very much for your time today. We surely appreciate you blessing us.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. All right, folks. Well, that's our show for today. And what we're going to do is hope that you join us next week here on Tough Talk Christian Radio. I hope everyone has a blessed week.
You have been listening to Tough Talk Christian Radio with Tony Gambone, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please visit toughtalkradionetwork.com for more information.